Live from Kakariko Village. Broadcast throughout the Retroverse, transmitted to the real world via a maze of wires connecting the Super Nintendo to a Wii, to a Wi-Fi network, and finally to the Internet. The Techno Funk Boy presents the Retro Zoo Super Show. Here are your hosts, Kai and Steven.
Greetings, everybody. This is the Retro Zoo Super Show. I am one of your hosts. Who are you?
Me?
No, the robot behind you.
This guy, I brought him. I haven't given him permission to talk yet, but I'm about to set that setting. Hold on one second.
Wait.
This is Murd. Murd, introduce yourself.
Murd?
I am Murd.
What is Murd?
Murd loves to kill.
Whoa.
What?
Whoa there, Murd. Hold on. Let me tone back the maniacal demon robot setting.
Wait, there's a maniacal demon robot setting?
Well, I brought him... Okay. This is mostly because of Drum. And my relationship with Drum. And I know he's a part of the band and he's done so much. And, you know, I know you and I are both on a never-ending quest to bring Drum to sentience. To have him have a mind of his own. And I don't think, unless he's confronted with the opposite of what we want him to be, will he ever truly reach his full potential? And so I created Murd.
Oh, the opposite of Drum. Murd.
I am Murd. Exterminate. Exterminate.
Hey, hold on. Let me tone that back a little bit more here. Okay. All right. I've got him on the lowest possible murder kill setting.
What did, that's an external dial. What happens if, like, we mistake that for the oven?
Well, he actually can be used as an oven. I actually cooked my toast in him this morning.
Is that why there's a hot pocket in there?
Yeah, you want it?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Here, hold on.
I do not like him.
Drum, it's fine. You're not going to... I mean, Murd is not replacing Drum, right?
No.
Can he drum?
Drum, you will always be special, and you will. And actually, Murd is here to enhance who you are.
He looks ugly.
I am not ugly.
Wait.
This actually might be more complicated than
I
thought.
Yeah, this is not. Oh, goodness.
Guy,
and first of all, there's. Okay, I know we made room in the studio when Anlin and Morel pre-recorded their stuff and no longer join us, but it's a little crowded in here with all the robots.
Well, you know, I built this really handy armrest onto Murd's head, and so I actually will use him. Murd, would you step over here a little bit?
I do not want to.
Murd, let me see. Desires setting off. Total slavery setting initiated.
Wait, that's another external dial.
Come over here, Murd. Okay,
this
there we go.
This is just way too convenient
right,
to accidentally
right
set him
yeah,
to,
look at that.
You know, evil rate 11.
Well, you know, I've got him on -1, and so he's pretty much benign at the moment. In fact, he won't even speak unless I ask him to, unless he did already speak when I didn't ask him to. Wait a second. There might be a glitch in the software.
You obviously don't need me. I'm leaving.
Drum, no, we need...
Drum, you are...
Murder.
Murder?
No, I was saying murd. Like, you know, like, like I wasn't saying... The name is not good.
We can call him murder. Listen.
No, we can't call him murder. It's, murd is bad enough. It's like weird and like, it's like The Shining. It's like, this is exactly like The Shining.
Red rum. Hey.
Shining is a very good film, but it doesn't end well. You know, it like, some bad stuff happens. And I feel like I'm going to be the cook that wanders into the building not knowing that there's a homicidal murd on the loose.
Well, we're not calling him Jack. I mean, we could call him Jack.
His name is Murder.
Jack Murder.
That's not good.
Listen. I made... Murd substantially smaller than Drum, and I used less durable components that I think were used in Drum's manufacturing. And so, really, I thought it would be good for Murd to try to murder us, and then Drum could stop him, and then that would help Drum to achieve some kind of sense of purpose.
Do you know how long I was in the studio just trying to get him to use the hi-hat in the battle theme on an upcoming EP? And you're expecting him to kung fu his way into saving us?
Well, I brought some...
I do not know kung fu.
See? That's my point!
Okay, well, we've all seen The Matrix, and we know all you have to do is get, like, little chips, and you can be like, kung fu, you know, jiu-jitsu, and then, like, and then he's like... I know kung fu or whatever, like what Neo says, whatever he does, the little thing, and he just, we got those same chips here.
I know kung fu.
See? Okay, Drum, show me. That was my water.
See, Murd only knows karate. So you'll be all right. You know kung fu, Drum? Fight. Murd, he just knows karate.
Okay, I am not Steven.
Yeah.
You have a certain set of skills.
Yeah.
That you've developed over your career.
Yeah.
I do not have said skills. I play the lute.
Well, that's funny that you say that.
I have no training.
Okay, look, I didn't bring just Murd, a killer robot, into our studio. I also brought you a lute that doubles as a poison blow dart gun.
See, I thought you were going to say something cool, like once upon a time in Mexico where I'll like snap the guitar neck off and it's a shotgun.
That was really cool.
That was an awesome scene. But blow dart?
Yep.
Shouldn't that be like with a woodwind?
No, it's a blow dart lute. Only thing is Murd is a robot, so the poison darts might not work on him. In fact, the blow darts probably won't either, but it'll help, you know, against our rodent problem that we've been having. So
that is true. Oh my goodness. And
Murd, why don't you say something here for us? Tell us how you feel.
I'm not a psychic.
I want to consume all human flesh and crush Drum beneath my massive destructor feet.
Okay, stop that.
I know kung fu.
Drum, quit that! Hey. You're breaking...
Let's clear a space in the middle of the studio. Let's let them go at it.
You knocked tea onto the soundboard.
Guy, I think they need to go at it full fledged.
No.
I also knitted the special little pants for each one of them.
Can you like tie up Murd outside or something?
I refuse to be tied up.
Can you just let him loose in the forest?
I will not be let loose in the forest.
Can you send him on a special quest?
Murd, We want you to go out and murder as many...
What?
Rodents that are infesting our property as possible.
Affirmative.
He's pretty quick on those.
Wow, that was good. Actually, I didn't think he would agree.
I think I can take him.
You cannot take him. Where did you find him?
Murd, I built Murd on the mountain.
Oh my goodness.
I had to channel my extra energy somehow. After I completed my missions, I was... felt the desire to create a massively underdeveloped killer robot who could one day challenge Drum for his position as the band drum machine creature.
So why didn't you make him a drummer instead of like a murderous robot?
I mean, because he's not meant to win, really.
I know Drum was originally, you know, programmed to be evil, but we've spent a long time getting rid of that.
But it was all just code, and it wasn't from Drum. It was us, like, kind of asserting our dominion over Drum. Drum, close your ears. Earmuffs. So...
Where did he get the... I didn't even know he had those.
Well, that's when I want to talk about you-know-who.
Mega Man. I would have... Okay. You know what? The earmuffs work. So what? I'm not going to complain about him. I was going to say something sarcastic, but I'm trying to not do that anymore. I feel like I'm having a negative influence on the show when, you know, and then I chastise myself for that. And then I come in and you're building killer robots.
Well, that's what happens when you don't have me on a show.
You were gone.
No, dude, that I was totally available for the Toys R Us show and I wanted to even make a cameo.
That's true.
And you were like, no, it's me and Anla. We're just going to go on our lives without you.
So, yeah, it's awkward.
Murd comes from that.
It's a little awkward with you and Anla, though, since you announced on air that you wanted to marry her instead of me. And I think...
You know what? I was having a weird day that day. I think we could chalk that up to the tea that Drum makes was a little too strong.
Goodness. Oh, this show, it's like I wanted you back and I missed you and
now
and
you're kind of ready.
And you've been weird ever since you got back. Oh, okay. Well, Murd is gone. Hopefully he gets lost in the forest.
Hopefully he kills all our rodents. The rodent
problem.
Well,
that would be nice first. Yeah. If we could, you know, kill the rats and then get lost in the forest, that would be awesome.
Or we could send Drum out to exterminate him.
No. We need Drum. We're in the middle of recording.
I didn't know you cared.
I do, Drum. Here, let me scratch you behind your drum. I still don't know what that means, but I'm gonna do it. See, he likes me. Oh, goodness. Oh, man, what you been up to this week?
Me... or Drum.
You.
Man, just, you know, doing the same old thing, trying to keep my sanity. And I've actually been finding ways to do that. And one of those ways is a game called Broforce.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that.
Have we talked about this on the show? I can't remember. It's like on the tip of my brain. You know how sometimes a name is on the tip of your tongue?
Yeah.
But sometimes memories can be on the tip of your brain. Like, did I actually remember that or no?
I know we've talked about it.
Okay.
But I don't know if it was on the air or not. Which, okay, and so this is posing a problem because I wanted, like the original idea about us chatting at the beginning is what are we playing and how's that going and how are we liking it? And, like, I'm still on Final Fantasy IV. And I purchased Final Fantasy IV: The After Years, the sequel that uh-huh. is much maligned, and I know it's maligned. People, y'all have to write me in with all the problems, and I know the problems with the game, but I wanted to experience it anyways. And I was planning on doing a casual stream of that on Saturday mornings on Twitch, and we really needed to record that day, and so that didn't happen. And I'm rapidly getting to the point where I'm going to be able to stream on Twitch regularly but I'm not there yet. And so, like, literally, that this is a long way of saying, you know, we had planned this segment of the show to be kind of how, what are you playing this week? And, you know, and we end up playing the same games over and over again. And so I distinctly remember us talking about Broforce like months ago, and you're still playing it. I don't know if it was on the air or not, but let's talk about it anyways, because I know we've talked about Final Fantasy IV, and it's what I've been playing. So.
Yeah, well,
at least people who are joining us more recently, you know, besides the very loyal people I know that we have that, you know, listen every single week without fail, sometimes multiple times.
And, you know, I think we should give them the right to say, look, if you're a regular listener and you remember us talking about Broforce, let us know what episode it was.
Yeah, please do.
so we can listen to it again.
We'll link it in the show notes, which is going to be, and by the way, this is kind of a milestone, not really, but technofunkboy.com/30.
What?
For episode 30. Now it is not the 30th episode we've done, because we did two jam episodes, which were unnumbered, so we're actually on 32. But even so, I mean, it has a zero at the end, so I guess that's a milestone. Congratulations.
Yeah. Congratulations to us.
You have.
Mostly to you, Kai.
Yeah, you've recorded almost 10 of those.
Hey, so maybe this would be my celebratory one for being here 10 times.
Right. You're celebrating episode 10. I'm celebrating 30.
Why is your episode count always better than mine? Everything you do is better than mine. All right. Well, look, let's talk about Broforce for a second. And I just want to say, as an aside, I've been playing Broforce casually for a number of years, and I say casually, there is a way to play it online on Steam. So Steam can be downloaded on Steam. I think it might be Steam exclusive, probably.
Let's look, because I got the page up.
Yeah, go ahead and pull it up. But it's basically, I mean, I'm going to read Wikipedia here just because it seems to somehow summarize things the best. Broforce is a side-scrolling run-and-gun platform video game developed by Free Lives and published by Devolver Digital. Development began in April 2012 as a game jam entry and continued with developer and popular support, existing as an early access game. The game was released on 15th of October 2015 for Microsoft Windows and OS X, and Linux port followed 2 days later. A PlayStation 4 version was released on March 1st, March 2016. Okay, so apparently...
I wasn't expecting you to read all of that. I was expecting you to read like the first sentence, and so I let it go.
Okay.
And then you kept going.
So informative.
Is this going to be the retro Wikipedia?
Yeah, well... pretty much lean on Wikipedia, but you know what the thing about it is?
I've done some really good research for today's episode that extended beyond Wikipedia.
Well, let me just go with Wikipedia.
Yeah.
When they say that the player character is a bro, a hyper-masculine action hero style commando who fights terrorists and rescues his bro teammates and prisoners of war from captivity.
So as somebody who's played it, let me interrupt the Wikipedia narrative, and Drum, could you grab his phone away from him?
I'm not programmed to do that.
You've got two robots working against me now.
Okay. I will access my phone again for the bro names, because it's freaking brolicious.
Now, I pulled him up right here. So, yeah, and this is the part that I was interested in, because there's a lot of, like we were talking about earlier, you know, this kind of revival of the side-scrolling action games or the side-scrolling platformers.
Right.
That, you know, it's certainly, I mean, one of the big problems with game development today is that it takes so much time and so much manpower. You know, we're going to start talking about a game here in the next few weeks that literally gets made by a handful of people. And that's the kind of the way things were back in the 80s, but now it takes hundreds of people sometimes to make a game, and years of development.
You think about it, though, the way the entertainment industry is moving. Okay, for instance, we look at Hollywood and we look at the blockbuster films and things like that. And we see, you know, they have these massive grossing weekends and they break these records. They continually break records. But overall, Hollywood and people standing in line at movie theaters, that's kind of becoming a thing of the past. Now, yeah. Why is that? Partly it's because
movies suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nowadays, movies are sucking hard.
But yeah, but because of the change in the media too.
And you also have a change in the consumer base.
Right.
You know, it's like, would you rather go see a brand new movie or would you rather be with a squad of your buddies trying to overtake, you know, this castle that you've been fighting to overtake for the last 3 days, and you finally have a weekend where, you know, you don't have any homework due, or you can put it off or whatever for a couple of days, and you can go on this, you know, you and your friends and your guild can go together and like overcome this, you know, whatever stronghold. So it's like,
and meanwhile, by the way, watch a movie on the other screen
while you're
Netflix.
Playing.
Yeah. Right. While you're playing.
Right.
And so, yeah, for sure.
So there's this idea that, or not an idea, the reality is, I think, and it's what is beginning to happen or has been happening for some time, is movies are like a one and done thing. I mean, how many times have you bought your favorite movie and you've watched it maybe two additional times, maybe 10 even, but that's, you know, the amount of hours, like think about the hours of usage. It's pretty minimal. Versus, now we have like subscriptions or like for games like World of Warcraft and things like that, you pay the subscription fee or for mini games, which are free to play, but the skins and the add-ons and the bonuses and things in the game are purchasable. I mean, games are grossing ridiculous amounts of money, especially good games that have become popular. I mean, it's just like, even like game like Overwatch, a newer game. It's like, I mean, that game came out within the last 5 years or so, or 4 years. And I mean, it's what everybody's playing. It's what everybody's playing, you know, or a lot of people. And that game's $50 a pop. You pay $7 to go see a movie and like every single kid and their older brother is purchasing Overwatch, you know?
Well, and I was actually having a conversation earlier today with a friend of the show who's been on several times, and I'll go ahead and tell you who it was, Dan Gelock. We were talking about Zelda Breath of the Wild, and they just got it, and he was surprised at the price. I do not have permission to tell this story, and I will get it after it airs.
Wait, this is live show, dude. Remember?
Yeah, that's why I said after it airs.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Let me text him real quick. No, but he was surprised that it cost $60, but I mean, I tell you what, he's going to get 60 hours of gameplay out of that game in a blink of an eye.
Right.
So, you know, now we're down to a buck an hour for entertainment at most. And that's a pretty good value proposition when you consider, you know, when I go see the new Avengers movie, I'm going to drop $11 on it and it's going to be 2.5-3 hours, you know, and that's $4 an hour.
Well, I mean,
and I get candy. That's $12
in the popcorn. I usually spend like a minimum of like $40 at the movie theater on candy and popcorn.
Right.
And then I usually am sick.
And that's just a small popcorn.
Well, that's a large popcorn refilled three times. But
a good value proposition.
I try to get my value, but then the value goes down the toilet like halfway through the show.
Well, yeah, literally.
And in the next few days too, it's like just the value is just shooting out everywhere.
Family show.
A little bit too much information, but it's the danger of trying to get the value out of food.
One day we'll have to remove the clean rating on our show.
Hey, man, you know, I thought you were going to say one day we're going to have to talk about the gastrointestinal dangers of the movie theater.
No, I think we might have just talked about that though.
So
we do not have to have that conversation.
No, but I think the thing is, okay, so for instance, even good games, like, there's several Blizzard games, and I'm not going to get into a Blizzard rant, but StarCraft is now free to play. StarCraft 2, I mean. And then they have Heroes of the Storm, which is another, it is a MOBA, a massive a multiplayer online battle arena. It's also free to play, and like there are many games now that are free to play or very, very cheap, and I mean, you're going to get hours of entertainment, especially the games that are competitive. And so I guess what I'm saying is that you have, I don't know where we started, but the bottom line is like cinema is kind of near dead, compared to what, or at least it's past its golden age. And we have, now we have interactive gameplay, you know, the video games and especially, just multiplayer games are, and also, you know, the single player, RPGs, you know, that are streamed on Twitch. This is the future, basically. And so I feel like this show has been embracing this transition. And I think that, you know, if I can say so myself, I think, well, and for Kai, I mean, I'm not really touting my own genius, but Kai is, he's kind of placed himself on the cutting edge of entertainment industry. And I think that
I'm jumping in right on Twitch, you know. He's five years after I should have.
Yeah, 5 years delay, man. Like, but you're still
cutting
there.
Cutting edge. I'm at the rear of the cutting edge, but so, cutting edge nonetheless.
Yeah, and so
podcasting, you know, years after Serial made it mainstream.
No, but it's still legit, man. And like, I think the thing is like, so like Broforce, it's what we started with. Like, man, there are some games out there that require. And I think this is where this all started. Okay, I'm remembering.
Yes.
So it all started with.
I'm also going to interrupt you after this statement because I'm going to take a left turn on you that I did not warn you about, but I'm going to take a left turn on you.
But should I finish my statement?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, because the whole like tying.
But be prepared. Left turn a coming.
Okay. Now that you're saying that, I'm starting to see the snake eating its tail. So this whole thing is coming back together with the snake eating its tail. And, the bottom line is, I forgot because you kept spooking me. Dude, I had like this great, hold on.
It was 2D platformers and 2D action games.
No, yeah, I know, but it was like, we were talking about, the fact that you spend all this money on a video game, like the budget for a video game is ridiculously high, but the amount of money that these people are making from some of these games, like Breath of the Wild or whatever, it's ridonkulous.
Yeah, in a lot of them.
I mean,
in
billions of dollars. I mean, $1 billion game.
But the attraction of and here's the thing about this is that are these games is like the new platforming games that they're spending gazillions of dollars on in development with hundreds of people. Are these games better than Mario 3? No.
Wait, you just jumped a no really fast without any analysis. But I'm going to go with you on that.
Look, you can throw up like game of the year type stuff. It's like, you know, like, okay, is Breath of the Wild one of the best Zelda things? All accounts say yes. But the average game, you know, we're spending tons and tons and tons and tons and tons more money on them. We're getting A-list actors in there. You know, we're getting, you know, really good voiceover and stuff. And are the games better? Are they more fun? And a lot of times, no. And I think the online developers, the indie developers are realizing it's like, we don't have to have everything fancy to make a good game. We can do it with a room full of people instead of a building full of people, you know, on a budget and make it a blast.
Yeah, well, and that's, I guess that's where we see Broforce and we see other games like this.
Now, here's left turn. Because you brought up Blizzard and I remembered what I wanted to ask you.
Oh, no.
So, we're going to give the audience a chance to tell us if we've talked about Broforce before. And if we haven't, we're going to talk about it next week.
Okay.
But, since we have stuck our toe into the red hot pool that is esports, I wanted to ask you, did you see that Blizzard's rulebook for professional Overwatch was leaked?
Wait, what do you mean? No, I did not see that.
So they have this professional Overwatch league that they've started.
Oh, yeah.
And they have like, you know, I mean, like any business, any endeavor, they have the rules of conduct for the people involved. And this was leaked, and there's a few things in it that are very controversial. Some of them I don't think should be controversial. So, I want to hit on some of the things that were controversial that should not be.
Okay, this is way out of left field, but I'm excited.
Yeah. So some of the things that were controversial that shouldn't be is that, like, Blizzard has the rights to your likeness and your streams of Overwatch forever. Now that was a big deal, but it shouldn't be. And here's why. Look. The NBA has the rights to show Michael Jordan dunking the ball. To this day. He's been retired forever. But to this day, they have the rights to do that. And they need the rights to do that.
Yeah.
You know, they do these documentaries, they do highlights from past years, they do highlight reels, all this stuff that, you know, you can't tell the story of basketball without telling about Michael Jordan. And you don't want to get into a situation where, like, Michael Jordan retires and he's like, no, you can't use my likeness anymore. Then there's a hole in the NBA that shouldn't be, you know?
Right.
And Overwatch, if this continues on for 20 years, there's going to be documentaries made about how it started. And you don't want to be chasing down the rights to everybody's likeness and the games they played while they were being paid to play these games. You know, this will work for hire. This is normal.
Right.
So that shouldn't be controversial. One of the things that was controversial that I thought was, that should be controversial is that basically, you're not allowed to say that you like or enjoy playing non-Blizzard games.
Wow.
It's so, like, if somebody asks you, and I'm sure, you know, and this is one of the things they put in rule books. I'm not even sure that they ever intended on enforcing this. I think they intended to put it in there just in case somebody says, I don't know, Overwatch is cool, but, you know,
I'm starting to get PUBG into PUBG now.
Is like so much better. This, Overwatch is kind of terrible when you compare it to Fortnite. You know, I think that's why they put it in there, but, you know, it really could be interpreted as, you know, somebody in your stream is going, hey, do you like Mario 3?
Sorry, I'm not allowed to communicate on that topic. Well,
it's kind of like the ridiculous scene in Jerry Maguire at the very beginning when Jerry Maguire is starting to feel like discontented with his job when he's with like a baseball player and somebody brings the baseball player baseball card to sign. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. My contract, I'm not allowed to sign this brand. It's only Upper Deck that I'm allowed to sign. And he hands the card back. It kind of comes across like that. And I don't know that Blizzard ever intended to enforce it like that, but it's notable. And so, being the esport guy on the show and being the Blizzard fan, and I have to say, Blizzard games, every Blizzard game I've played has been great. Everyone. I haven't played that many, but I love them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is not a knock on Blizzard, you know, or me making fun of them at all. But I wondered if you had seen that. And I thought it was interesting.
No, I hadn't, but I'm not surprised. And you know, I'll tell you right now, one of the things, you know, I haven't been following esports is religiously in a general. Well, actually, that's funny. Let me contradict myself.
Let me say the exact opposite.
I haven't been following them generally, but the other day I was curious, and so I was looking up something about esports, and I remember, I know you know what it was? I was interested in what ESPN, because they have their own esport page. So is like, oh, you know, the sports, whatever. Well, they, and a lot of it, actually like 90% of it is Overwatch on ESPN. But, you know, as you tick down, there'll be something, a major occurrence will happen in another esport. I think it was StarCraft, the first female, competitor, Scarlet, won a major, series. And that was a big deal. Cause, you know, so I was looking at, ESPN's like little stream of, you know, different articles and mentions about esports. And, you know, I'm mostly sifting for anything mentioned about StarCraft, but it was mostly not StarCraft. It was
StarCraft.
I know, it was mostly just Overwatch. And you know, so I'm not a big Overwatch. I don't follow Overwatch. I don't play Overwatch. But I know that it's bad A compared, you know, based off of what friends and, you know, people who've played it a lot, they just love it and they play it a lot. So, but I think the thing about it is, just watching that development and the entertainment industry moving towards esports it gets me excited. And I think that there are going to be games, that lend themselves to spectating. And I think Overwatch is one of those games. And I think StarCraft is as well, but I think at the same time, StarCraft is old and it's kind of, it might be past its prime in terms of I think there needs to be it. I actually don't even know about the genre of real time strategies in general.
Yeah.
Like I'm not even sure if that's going to last much longer. Because it's pretty much moved to MOBAs, which is, you know, real time strategy. Like you think about it, the pinnacle of that is StarCraft. So that's a one versus one. It's like a chess match. It's like watching professional chess.
Yeah.
Versus when you watch a MOBA like Dota or Heroes of the Storm or any of these other MOBA games out there, like it's a team play, and so you're watching a sport at that point. You know, you're watching there's teamwork, they're involved. I think it lends itself better to live entertainment. And even when I've been to some Dream Hacks, a couple Dream Hacks when they were in Austin, and I'm actually planning on going again this year to the Dream Hack in Austin. There's something about watching live esports. I mean, it's really compelling, and I really think that in the future, especially we're seeing it not in the future, it's in the now, but I think we're going to see the minimization of just going to see the movies, you know, like this traditional form of entertainment. I mean, people have been going to the movies since the 20s or the teens, you know, like the silent films. People, that's old, man. Like people now want to go see, they want to go watch something. They want to participate in something that they themselves can participate in and contribute to. And so I think we're seeing that even with the speed runs and AGDQ and stuff like that. I mean, we're seeing people who have held these games dearly, held them close to themselves, like played them for a long time. And now they're watching people that could do it way better than they ever could. And they're finding out why, and they're learning about it. And it's the same thing with watching esports. You know, you're watching people play games that you played, that you're interested in. And like, holy cow, these guys are nailing it way better than you ever did and ever could.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that's going to decrease. I think that will increase. And so I think that, you know, the more of these, like these guys get on board with, like these side scrollers and like, you know, and a big part of that is Steam, you know, you have these platforms now where you can just buy these games, these fun games for cheap.
Right.
You know,
and these independent games, which I mean, is part of the democratization of all of this. And that's the thing with Twitch too. It's like, you know, you watch League of Legends, you can go play League of Legends right now, you know?
Well,
I can set up, I can watch Final Fantasy IV and I can set up a stream, and now I'm streaming Final Fantasy IV. And if I'm entertaining enough, people are going to watch me. And if more people watch me, you know, I can get paid for it. And it's just about me having the ability. And it's the same way with game development now. It's like, if you have the ability, if you have the creativity, you can get it up on Steam and make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that in this growing economy of gaming and entertainment, this kind of renaissance that's going on, I think there's going to be a place for us, Kai, the game philosophers. Cause I feel very, I feel very philosophical talking about all this stuff.
If we survive MERD, then maybe that will be the case, but we do need to get to our break. And so we have not forgotten our topic today. And our topic today is actually JRPGs, and what in the world are they?
Oh man.
So please do tune in for that. In the meantime though, if you are interested in my Twitch channel, it's at TechnoFunkBoy. Please do visit our website, technofunkboy.com. And we did just set up our Patreon page. If you do believe in what we're doing and want to help us continue that, please do consider donating to that. We do have some free music coming up. We do have some special episodes that are going to be Patreon only going up in the near future. And so please do jump on that. But in the meantime, we will jump on a break and come back with a little JRPG action.
He comes in the night, seemingly out of nowhere, a blur of yellow whose only mission is justice. His name is already legend, but the reality doesn't quite line up with the myth, and we're about to find out exactly how wrong we've been about him. He is the Yellow Canary. The Yellow Canary is a comedic thriller by Paul Lytle about a would-be superhero who may just be crazy enough to make a difference. The Yellow Canary by Paul Lytle, available from Amazon in print and on Kindle. Check for the link in the show notes.
Welcome back. All right, so JRPG... Bird, what are you doing?
I have caught all the rodents that you requested.
Why are you bringing them?
And eviscerated them. Their guts are now dangling out of their abdomens, and they are in horrific pain.
Drum, are you able to do anything?
No.
Steven, can you do something?
I'm speechless. Maybe I should take Murd out.
Yeah, Murd, can you go outside with Steven for just dripping. A little bit? I'll cover while you're gone.
Okay. I'm sorry. Kai, I'm sorry. I don't usually say sorry. Drum, initiate subroutine, clean up disgusting, horrific mess.
Why is
of
that
murderous
a
robot?
Why is that a subroutine?
I just thought we might need that in the future.
How long have you been preparing this?
Since before the mountain.
Oh.
All right, I'm going to take Murd out of here.
Please
you just keep going. I'm going to take him out and clean him up.
JRPGs. What in the world was I talking about? Okay, deep breath. Oh, good. All right. Well, we wanted to talk about JRPGs a little bit because the topic is going to come up here in our next series quite a bit, and I wanted to give you an idea of, if you don't know already, kind of how JRPGs and Western RPGs and tabletop RPGs differ, and so. I think this story really starts with the tabletop RPGs and, you know, the early days of Dungeons and Dragons and that sort of thing. And that really developed pre-video games, or at least mostly before video games were sophisticated and detailed enough to really even attempt to recreate that sort of experience. And with the tabletop RPGs, everything is happening by description, and perhaps with some maps, perhaps with some illustrations to assist things. But what you're really looking at is words on a paper and words being said to describe what's going on, and your mind fills in the rest. And it gets this title, role-playing games, because you step into a role to play the game. And you normally create a character, and you give that character different abilities, different attributes, and you play that character according to those statistics that you set about. And so all these numbers gets distilled into a game. And that really lends itself to the computers, because I mean, what you're doing is just algorithms. It's just math. You know, you kind of fill everything out with all these descriptions of what's going on, and you know, and this is the type of enemy, and this is kind of what they look like, and this is the situation you're in. But when it comes down to the battle, the dice roll is the random number generator. And that is compared to different sets of numbers to figure out what happens. And so it was pretty early on that people started figuring out that, you know, this is very similar to what we can do in a computer game, where, you know, these numbers can translate directly into the computer experience. The trouble is, of course, is technology and memory space. And you could not have a full, you know, like you know, five-member multiplayer experience where, you know, you're dictating the story and all and choosing where to go and what to do and all those things, because the system could not handle it at that point. But what you did get is a really early adopters to this, and this is kind of where the West was actually ahead of Japan in the gaming world, because you had these games, a lot of them like on Apple II, where it sought in some way or another to recreate that sort of role-playing experience. And so a lot of them manifested themselves in, you know, text-based adventure games, like Zork, for instance, where, you know, you do a thing, it gives you a readout of what happened, much like the verbal description of what happened in Dungeons & Dragons. And it's like, okay, this is how it reacts. And then, you know, you put in a command, and the computer's programmed to recognize different verb sets in conjunction with different nouns and result in an action. And having it text-based had a lot of advantages, because without graphics, without much sound, you could actually, you know, make good use of your memory. Text is not that memory intensive, and so you can make a lot of options. But when we started trying to move these things into the graphical world, you know, we continued with adventure type games, but we also had the burgeoning of Western style role playing video games. And this came about in games like Wizardry and in the early Ultima games, where, you know, there was a very, very, you know, low def graphical interface. A lot of it, especially like in Wizardry and such, a lot of it is still heavily, heavily text based, but you do have something of a graphical interface that you are working with, that you're moving around in. And there's, you know, even these kind of dungeon crawlery type of areas where you're working your way around a dungeon, around a maze, and encountering things along the way. You know, Ultima went on to just become wildly popular and very in depth, and just very, very deep in what you could do. And I really think it was kind of culminating in Ultima 4, where it was taking that kind of, you know, of you creating a character and playing the character in a way that you decided to play it, into this really complex virtue system where you are trying to perfect these virtues in different situations, and you have to make choices along the way. It's like one of the first adopters of kind of the alignment system. Well, these are the elements that have just kind of persisted in Western style role-playing games. Taking off of Dungeons & Dragons, you have your own character creation, and as much as possible, you have branching paths, you know, so you can choose your own way. You can choose your own responses. These sort of things have also persisted in the adventure game, where you have multiple choices. You can respond in the way that you want to, and you get differing outcomes based on that. So the Japanese took these concepts and initially boiled them down, and we're going to talk more about how that gets boiled down later, but, you know, specifically, an adventure game designer, Yuji Horii, who just loved Wizardry and Ultima games, wanted to bring this style of game into kind of the mainstream consciousness, but was having trouble figuring out how to do that, because he thought that these PC and Apple role-playing games, these Western RPGs, just a little too deep for the mass public. And so they had kind of this niche market, and it did very well in that niche market. But as far as mainstream success, they weren't, you know, they weren't reaching what he thought they could. And so the Japanese style role-playing game, or a JRPG, was born. And it was, a lot of these elements really boiled down. And so, you know, from the beginning, you know, the very first thing you encounter in a Western style RPG is very often your character creation. And that's honestly where a lot of people get lost right off the bat. You know, you're asking them to do math while playing a video game, like in the first minute. And so the Japanese style pre-formulates the character a lot of times, or, you know, at most will give you the choice between different classes. But in those initial ones, it's just like, no, you're going to play this character. And a lot of times you don't have those branching paths or the option of how to respond in certain situations. That path has been laid for you. And so there's this very specific story that you're going to play. You know, to use the example of Final Fantasy IV, you cannot choose whether Cecil becomes a paladin or not. To advance the story, he's going to become a paladin. And that sort of thing wouldn't happen in a Western RPG. The option to become a paladin probably would be, but it would also give you the option to, no, I'm gonna remain kind of an evil alignment and try to slug it out that way. And so the Japanese RPG is much more focused on this kind of sweeping epic story, and very often will have a lot more twists and turns in it because they're only telling one story. While the Western RPG, especially early on, was more limited in storytelling because there were so many ways that you could play out that story, and they had to put in the responses in all of those different circumstances. And so, you know, that kind of brings up a criticism of JRPGs. And it's a fair criticism, mostly leveled by, you know, either the tabletop players or the Western RPG players. It's like, is this really even a role-playing game? Because you're playing a character, much like you play Mario or Link, but you're not taking on a role. You're not actually, you know, you're not actually playing this role. Is, you know, that you have no option to respond in certain ways. You have no option to, you know, let, you know, to control your character to do certain things that you believe your character would do in those situations. And so you are on a plot that is on rails. It's going in this direction. You know, you can slow it down or speed it up, but that's it. And so is this really a role-playing game? And if we're, you know, and if we're defining the terms according to, you know, to the tabletop role-playing game ideal, no, it's not. But it, I mean, it's something completely different. And I there was this guy in high school, and going on a slight tangent, but there was this guy in high school, and this was in the 90s when alternative rock was really big. And he complained that, you know, alternative was not alternative because it was mainstream. And so what's it the alternative of? I mean, the whole reason they called it alternative originally was because it was an alternative to what is mainstream. But if it's now mainstream, then how do we call it alternative? And I thought that was idiotic because it's just a term. It's the label put on the thing. And a lot of times these labels are put on a thing, because of the way they started out. And then they changed over time. And a lot of times they're put on there because somebody's making fun of something. You think about like impressionist art, you know, that was impressionism was originally put on those pieces as a derogatory term. You know, it's like that somebody was making fun of it and they just took it. But you know, it's hard. It's hard to like, go back and re-label a genre of video games or a genre of entertainment just because as it changes, the specific term doesn't apply as much. Honestly, I would just say, you know, don't worry about it all that much. Because it developed out of the tradition of the tabletop RPG to the Western RPG to the Japanese style RPG, it's called a role playing game. And that's why it's called that. And so, that's kind of how we're understanding it. And so that's kind of the way we're going to have to talk about it. You know, you can put a new label on it if you want to, but nobody's going to understand you. And so it might not be the best use of your time. So that is the Japanese role-playing game. And the reason we're really getting into this is because of what we're going to be doing. Oh, there's the door. Hold on.
Oh, hey.
Hey. Steven, yeah.
Hey, yeah.
Did you get that taken care of?
Yeah, I got murdered. Are we ready to start?
Yes. Except I'm finished.
So wait, dude.
It's a live program, man.
You just did the entire thing without me.
Yes.
I thought you were going to put our listeners on hold.
Why would I do that?
Because that's weird. I wasn't there. This is an episode that has me in it.
That's weird.
All right. I'm feeling awkward and kind of used.
All right.
Like I was just here to serve murder.
I tell you what.
Okay.
We will do, we're going to close off this program and then you and I, we're going to do a special program right afterwards where we repeat all the same information just so you could be there.
Okay.
Sounds good?
That actually makes me happy.
Great. Okay, well, thank you all for joining us. I really do appreciate for all of you that do come back every single week. We really appreciate you. We know that you have been telling friends and family about us. We've definitely seen it. We appreciate that. Please do continue to do that. And if you do like the program and want to consider helping us, supporting us. As we do that, please go over to Patreon and we will have a link in our
Patron show
notes page. I think, yes, Patron. What was it? It was patreon.com/technofunkboy. Let me check that to see if that is a thing.
And remember,
yes, that is a thing.
Is it a thing? Did you put the $100 gift bracket for the ladies to chat with me?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Sweet.
That's in there. Yeah. patreon.com/technofunkboy. But in either case, please do go to our show notes at technofunkboy.com/30. That's episode 30. We do appreciate it. Thank you so much. And we will catch you next week. So all of this, to give you a little heads up, the whole reason we were establishing this is to start talking about one of the most important JRPGs of all time, and we're going to spend some time on it. And I'm really excited because we got some special stuff coming up for y'all on this topic. And so, please tune in next week. Just to give you a little hint of what we're going to be talking about.
Not a spoiler.
It starts with D, and it rhymes with Wagon Warrior. We'll see y'all next week.
Retro Zoo Super Show is brought to you by the Technofunk Boy. Follow us on Twitter at Technofunk Boy, on Facebook at the Technofunk Boy, and sign up for our email list at technofunkboy.com. Also look for us on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon for music. If you are so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast catcher. If you are not so inclined, you are obviously some sort of villain trying to conquer the world. Unowned music and gameplay clips are used for educational and critical purposes. Thank you for listening. Keep gaming. And once you have responsibilities that need to be done at this time, then you can game later.